This is Free Speech Radio News. It's Friday, February 10, 2006. From the studios of KPFK in Los Angeles, I'm Aura Bogado. On today's newscast, we'll hear from Southern California, where 200 Latino and African American prison inmates have endured 6 days of rioting. On Capitol Hill, former FEMA Director Michael Brown blames the Department of Homeland Security for Hurricane Katrina response failures. And Zapatista Subcomandante Marcos makes his way through Oaxaca. We'll hear the FSRN exclusive report. All this and more after the headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with the Free Speech Radio News headlines. Protests continue to rage across the Muslim world today in condemnation of cartoon depictions of the Islamic prophet Muhammad. In India, home to the world's second largest Muslim population, thousands participated in nationwide demonstrations. Vinod Kejos reports from Delhi.
Today, after the Friday prayers, members of India's Muslim community organized massive rallies across the country. Thousands demonstrated in cities and towns throughout India. They burned Danish flags and asked the Indian government to cut diplomatic ties with Denmark.
Denmark!
Imams, the religious leaders, gave special talks in the mosque. Some other leaders attacked the US and its war against terror for targeting Muslims. The community leaders also expressed their anger at the Indian government's silence on the matter.
Denmark! Hey, hey! America! Hey, hey! America! Hey, hey!
From Old Delhi in India, this is Vinod Kejos.
France's right-wing government has rammed its controversial new youth employment law through parliament, using special procedure to cut short the debate. But opposition parties and workers and students' unions have vowed to fight on. Tony Cross reports from Paris.
Prime Minister Dominique de Villepin enraged Socialist Party MPs by guillotining the parliamentary debate. He invoked a special article of the Constitution to stop it. The only way the opposition could have responded would have been to put a vote of censure in his government. They failed to do so today, ahead of the Assembly's winter break next week. So de Villepin's first job contract becomes law. It gives employers the right to take on young workers on two-year contracts, during which they can be fired at any time without any reason. The left spun out the debate as long as it could, making sure that it was still going on Tuesday when about 400,000 workers and students demonstrated against the proposal throughout France. The socialists say they will table a censure vote when the holiday is over on February the 21st, even though a minor right-wing party, the UDF, voted against the measure and several ministers are reportedly unhappy about it. The vote of censure is very unlikely to be passed. Workers and students' unions haven't given up hope, however. They've called a second day of protest for March the 7th, where they'll call for the law to be repealed. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Tony Cross in Paris.
According to court documents, Vice President Dick Cheney's former chief of staff, Louis Scooter Libby, has testified to a federal grand jury that his superiors authorized him to leak secret information to reporters. Selena Masuta reports from Washington, D.C.
Louis Scooter Libby resigned last year after he was indicted on charges of lying to FBI agents and the grand jury about how he learned the identity of former CIA operative Valerie Plame. Plame is married to former U.S. Ambassador to Iraq, Joseph Wilson, a staunch critic of the Bush administration. After traveling to Niger in 2003 to investigate allegations that Saddam Hussein had sought to buy uranium there, Wilson accused White House officials of using misleading intelligence about Hussein's nuclear weapons capacity to justify the invasion of Iraq. 8 days later, syndicated columnist Robert Novak, based on Libby's information, disclosed Plame's covert CIA status. Exactly who leaked the information to Libby remains to be seen. For FSRN in Washington, D.C., I am Selena Masuda.
Sanitation officials have detected foot and mouth disease in cattle in northern Argentina this week. Argentina has announced a national health crisis to control the spread of the disease. Marie Trigona reports from Buenos Aires.
Chile, Brazil, Colombia, Peru, Paraguay, Israel, and South Africa have closed their doors to Argentine beef imports following the outbreak of foot and mouth disease near the Paraguayan border. The National Service for Food Safety and Quality said it had found some 70 cattle showing signs of the infections in the province of Corrientes. Sanitary officials suspect that the animals were not vaccinated or given defective vaccines by provincial governor Romero Ferres, who owns the ranch. Argentina's agricultural secretary will travel to the U.S. to fight off prolonged market closures. Argentina, one of the world's leading beef exporters, was hit by a foot-and-mouth crisis 5 years ago. Foot-and-mouth is a highly contagious viral disease that causes blistery lesions on the tongue, lips, and hooves of cows, sheep, and pigs, but does not harm humans. Economists estimate that the foot-and-mouth virus will cause over $500 million in losses. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Marie Trigona in Buenos Aires.
In Los Angeles, the farmers of the country's largest community garden announced this week that an anonymous donor has pledged $8 million to help them buy back their collective farm from would-be developer Ralph Horowitz. KPFK's Kelly Barnes has more.
LA's mayor recently responded to the South Central Farmers letter-writing campaign demanding the city buy the farm and stop development. He said the city has no money for the purchase and he wished people would send dollars, not just letters. Friends of the Farmers launched a Send the Mayor a Dollar campaign, and tomorrow they'll stage a vegetable die-in at Horowitz's home to focus on what they call the greed and usury of Horowitz, who is not willing to sell the farm back for a mere $3 million profit. The developer paid $5.1 million for the tract of land 3 years ago in what the farmers say was a backroom deal. Instead of accepting the $8 million pledged to the farmers by the anonymous donor, Horowitz is reportedly holding out for $16 million. I'm Kelly Barnes in L.A. for FSRN.
And I'm Shannon Young for Free Speech Radio News.
Former FEMA Director Michael Brown said that the Bush administration's focus on terrorism is the reason why the response to Hurricane Katrina failed. Speaking as a private citizen at a Senate hearing, Brown criticized the Department of Homeland Security and told senators he was in constant contact with the White House on the urgent situation in New Orleans. Ingrid Drake reports from Capitol Hill on the ongoing search for answers into what went wrong.
For 5 months, the U.S. Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs has been investigating the federal government's role in preventing and responding to last year's Gulf Coast hurricanes. Republican Chair Susan Collins was one of the senators who had the top two officials during Hurricane Katrina at the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, under oath today.
What is so troubling is we have heard over and over again from top DHS officials, from top DOD officials, from the leadership throughout the administration, that they were simply unaware of how catastrophic the hurricane's impact had been because of the breaching of the levee. How can you help us understand this enormous disconnect?
Michael Brown, a Bush appointee who resigned as FEMA head last September, says his staff did their job, reporting to the Department of Homeland Security, the White House, and other federal agencies.
It's my belief that had there been a report come out from Marty Bamundi that said, yes, we've confirmed that a terrorist has blown up the 17th Street Canal levee, then everybody would have jumped all over that and been trying to do everything they could. But because this was a natural disaster, that has become the stepchild within the Department of Homeland Security. And so you now have these two systems operating, one which cares about terrorism, and FEMA and our state and local partners who are trying to approach everything from all hazards.
Brown also said he would support going back to the arrangement under the Clinton administration when FEMA was an independent cabinet-level division. Representatives from the Department of Homeland Security, who testified later, said Brown did not do a good job of communicating to them the severity of the disaster. Democratic and Republican senators also challenged Brown's leadership. Minnesota Republican Norm Coleman.
I'm not sure you got it. I got to tell you, the record, not the emails, but the record, reflects that you didn't get it, or you didn't in writing or some way make commands that would move people to do what has to be done until way after it should have been done.
Senator, with all due respect, I have admitted to mistakes publicly. I've admitted to mistakes in hearings. What more, Senator Coleman, do you want from me?
Last night, the Senate learned the White House counsel was not invoking executive privilege to prohibit Brown from speaking about his communications with the president's advisors. Today, senators like Joseph Lieberman pressed Brown for specifics on who in the White House knew what and by when.
It's surprising again to me that you wouldn't remember whether the president was on your call to Joe Hagan.
I don't want to appear arrogant, but I talk to the president a lot. And so sometimes when he's on the phone or not on the phone, I just wouldn't recall.
Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff, will testify before the committee on Tuesday. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Ingrid Drake in Washington, D.C.
The Senate reached an agreement on the Patriot Act, paving the way for its passage, although staunch civil liberties proponents are discouraged by the deal. As Leanne Caldwell reports from Capitol Hill, they say it offers little protection against government intrusion.
A group of Republican and Democratic senators said the compromise accepted by the White House is an improvement to the version the House of Representatives was imposing. Democratic Senator Richard Durbin from Illinois.
If you measure it against the original Patriot Act, as Senator Sununu has said, we've made progress here. Progress that moves us in the right direction, protecting basic civil liberties at a time when we are dealing with a war on terrorism.
The agreement could provide enough civil liberties protections to ensure the 60 votes needed in the Senate to move the provision forward. The Senate failed to pass the USA Patriot Act reauthorization late last year after a New York Times article revealed that the president used the National Security Agency to surveil Americans. But concerns still exist. Democratic Senator Russell Feingold from Wisconsin said in a statement he refuses to support this bill, saying it doesn't protect the rights and freedoms of Americans. Lisa Graves, senior counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union, goes further, saying that the president's authorization of the domestic surveillance program, sidestepping the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, undermines the Patriot Act.
No matter what changes they make to the Patriot Act, which after all modify the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, if this administration is not going to follow those rules, then we have a much bigger debate ahead of us about the rule of law in this country.
Two controversial Patriot Act provisions are authorized under FISA, the roving wiretap and the so-called lone wolf terrace. Roving wiretaps allow the monitoring of multiple telephones, and the lone wolf terrorist provision allows investigators the use of FISA to monitor suspected terrorists. The Senate compromise cut extensions on these two provisions from 7 years to 4 years. And Senate dealmakers are claiming success on the library provision. Republican Senator John Sununu from New Hampshire.
We've added language that clarifies that libraries operating in the traditional role are not subject to national security letters.
Other alterations to the act involve Section 215 and the national security letters. Recipients of these letters are informed that their personal information, including financial records and transactions, could be obtained by the government. This proposal allows them to challenge their case in court after 1 year. Proposals denied are the guidelines under which people are told to hand over personal information. This group of senators wanted the government to show individual connection to a terrorist, rather than the current lesser standard relevance to an investigation in which direct connection is not necessary. Republican Senator Chuck Hagel from Nebraska.
The one I think that clearly we are most concerned about deals with Section 215 as it relates to relevance. We will monitor it closely. We don't believe the protections are there that need to be there in a long-term permanent legal way.
Leader of the Patriot Act reauthorization in the House of Representatives, James Sensenbrenner from California, declined to comment on if this version is acceptable until the bill passes the Senate. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Zapatista Subcomandante Marcos, or Delegate Zero, wraps up his 6-day trip to the Mexican state of Oaxaca tomorrow, part of the nationwide listening tour known as the Other Campaign. One of the key demands of the social movements involved in the Other Campaign is the liberation of the country's political prisoners. Upon his arrival to the Oaxacan capital, the Zapatista representative paid a visit to the Ixcoter State Penitentiary to meet with over a dozen indigenous political prisoners. FSRN's Vladimir Flores was there and files this exclusive report.
Many of Oaxaca's political prisoners are casualties of a power struggle between two forms of doing politics. In many towns of this majority indigenous state, conventional party politics are rejected in favor of a traditional system that elects its leadership through popular assemblies. Inside of the Ixcotl Penitentiary, political prisoners from different regions of Oaxaca thanked the Zapatista delegate for not forgetting about them. Abraham Ramirez from the Committee in Defense of Indigenous Rights has been imprisoned for a year now.
Y en primer lugar, pues quiero agradecer a la delegación Zapatista.
You have taken this big effort to come through the prisons and see the reality that we find ourselves in, those who have in some way raised our voices. Because, well, not just anyone risks coming inside of a jail to see this reality.
Perhaps the best-known group of indigenous prisoners are from the Los Ichal region, a conflict-ridden area occupied by paramilitaries, police, and federal troops for more than a decade. In the Zapotec village of San Agustin Los Ichal, the traditional leadership was taken into custody in early 1996, along with more than 150 small farmers, all accused of being members of the EPR guerrilla group. 10 years later, 13 people of the town's traditional authorities remain in prison. Agustin Luna was the traditionally elected mayor of San Agustin Los Ichal when he was taken into custody in 1996.
Somos 13 compañeros indígenas de la región. Estamos.
There are 13 of us here in the region. We remain in detention after more than 10 years in prison because, unfortunately, the Mexican government has accused us of a problematic situation that we're really not a part of. We were accused from the beginning of different federal crimes and for a supposed relationship with the EPR armed group. But with firmness and dignity, we tell you that we don't belong to any armed group. What we do recognize is that we have fought within legal means in the sense of searching for better development of our communities. And that is the crime that we do admit to.
Para nuestras comunidades, y ese es el delito que sí reconocemos.
Isabel Almaraz is also from the Los Ichal region who came to Oaxaca City seeking medical attention but was arrested and accused of belonging to the guerrilla group.
In 1996, my father also worked in a municipal government. He was also arrested, tortured, and also accused of having participated in an armed group, which isn't true. My husband has also been the target of a political persecution because instead of arresting him, they arrested me. I've now been in here for 3 years and 8 months, awaiting trial for crimes that I did not commit.
Inside of the state's central penitentiary, Subcomandante Marcos affirmed that as the other campaign travels throughout the country, one of its principal demands will be that of freedom for political prisoners and prisoners of conscience.
All of the people, men and women, who are in prison for their way of thinking, which always has to do with seeking justice, we are taking you along as our compañero and as our first demand before all that we are doing. How is it possible that the government says that there will be elections and democracy and all that? No country can say that it is free and democratic if it has imprisoned men and women for the crime of thinking differently.
After reaffirming their conviction to not lose hope, the political prisoners of Iscotel announced that they will soon take part in different actions from inside of the prison in support of the other campaign. Oaxaca, Mexico, Vladimir Flores, Free Speech Radio News.
Prison inmates at a Southern California detention center have lived through 6 days of rioting as fighting among 200 Latino and African American inmates continues at the medium security facility. FSRN's Leilani Albano was at the Pitches Detention Center and takes a look at what community leaders call the root causes of prison violence.
Since last week, nearly 500 inmates at the jail, which is located 20 minutes north of Los Angeles, have been caught up in the fighting, leaving one dead and 90 injured. Yesterday, skirmishes between the two groups began at 1 p.m., shortly after media crews visited the Pitches Detention Center in Castaic. A group of mostly black clergy, as well as Latino and Asian American chaplains, the Nation of Islam, and activist groups visited the facility in an attempt to quell the violence. No serious injuries were reported after Thursday's fighting. Najee Ali is director of the Los Angeles-based Project Islamic Hope, a social justice organization.
I'm here to talk to the inmates. We want to make sure they know that the community is very concerned about their safety and welfare.
Since then, prison officials say the 4,000 prisoners housed at the jail have been divided into racially segregated living quarters until tensions subside. The clashes reportedly stem from long simmering tensions between Black and Latino gang members that have spilled over to the jail system. Ali blames Latino inmates, who largely outnumber their Black counterparts, for instigating the violence.
As everyone knows, it's the Latino inmates who are attacking the Black inmates, so I'm not trying to make this a racial situation, but the Latino inmates, by their unprovoked attack on Black inmates, has made this a racial situation.
Black inmates had this to say about their predicament.
It's a war. If they put us back together, more people are going to die.
The reason why it's going to be a war is because there's a lot of tension between the both of us, both races.
Regardless of who is to blame, both parties complained of increasing stressful conditions following the lockdown. They say they are barred from showering, cannot leave their cells, and have had most of their belongings, including their shoes and blankets, confiscated since the lockdown. Mondo of Los Angeles is housed in one of the Latino dormitories.
It's been real hectic, you know, with, being our hygiene, you know, we've been in here, you know, it's been cold, you know, we have none of our property.
While racial tensions are said to have been at the root of this week's conflicts, prison officials and organizers agree that overcrowding at the facility exacerbates problems at the jail. This fact is due in part to L.A. County's practice of housing its overflow of the system's most violent inmates at the facility, says prison officials.
We are overcrowded. We are releasing people, misdemeanants, sentenced to the jail for minor crimes at 10% of their sentence because we're overcrowded. And that's how I'm controlling this population in terms of size.
The inclusion of people convicted of violent offenses to the Castaic facility can also explain for the increased violence. Klugman says staff authorities try to lessen the tension by housing inmates with similar criminal histories. To stem the tide of violence plaguing Pitches, says Jerry Silva, director of Families to Amend Three Strikes, prison authorities should make policy changes to address these issues.
It works very well if the people that you call the scum of the earth are thought to be fighting each other all the time, because then why would you ever release them? This is the place for them. I mean, it just fits into the master plan of some people belong in prison. We need prisons for criminal elements.
Teresa Cusimano, who is a member of Critical Resistance, a prison rights organization, agrees.
Right now, the way things are going, you know, they're not gonna get nothing out of it, beating each other, killing each other. They need to go stick together.
Calls to the mayor's office were not returned by airtime. For FSRN, this is Leilani Albano in Los Angeles.
Much of the international sports world has set its sights on the Winter Olympic Games, which kick off today in Turin, Italy. But behind the celebration and pageantry, human rights activists, university students, and other community members are converging on the heavily secured event to call attention to international struggles. Manuela Aldabe reports from Turin.
Today, the 20th Olympic Winter Games starts in Torino, in the north of Italy, and will run from 10 February to 26. The opening ceremonies are scheduled to begin at 8 p.m. Italian time. There will be 35 people in the stadium, 20,000 athletes, 22 presidents, and 53 prime ministers of different countries. Bill Gates, Laura Bush, Sofia Loren, and Luciano Pavarotti will be in the ceremony. The security in the city is at a state of high security alert with 15,000 policemen and all flights cancelled from 6 p.m. on. More than 20,000 volunteers are working in the event, an enthusiastic crowd of people wait along the Olympic Flames path. Simon is one young volunteer, explains why he's giving his time.
Because they are happening in Turin, and this is important for me and for my city, I'm doing this very happily for the next days, and I hope the city will be a very, very nice party for everyone.
But not everybody is happy with the Olympic Games. The organizers has to change the itinerary of the Olympic path over concerns about the demonstrations by peace and human rights activists. The protesters declared in the beginning the Olympic Games were created to give a peace time between the cities. And the torch is like peace symbol, but now in the world there is not peace time. University students are preparing demonstration against U.S. First Lady Laura Bush, the president of the U.S. delegation. Free Speech Radio News asked Andrea Bonadonna, university student, why they are demonstrating.
Because we live in a permanent war where a million people are suffering in this world.
And I think Laura Bush, as a representative of the United States government, is the worst welcome visitor in this Olympic Games.
The security in the city is on maximum alert. 15,000 policemen are in Torino to protect dignitaries like Laura Bush and her daughter Barbara, Italian President Carlo Azeglio Ciampi, British Prime Minister Tony Blair's wife, Charlie Blair, and King Juan Carlos of Spain were also expected to attend to the open ceremony. Italy will close the airspace over the city, and NATO will patrol the sky of the Winter Olympics open ceremony. The security minister of Italy, Pisanu, said there is no terrorist risk, but he is concerned about the demonstrations. Chiara Cerruti from Blackout Radio is following the protest that started 2 months ago when the Olympic torch began its carriage from Naples to Turin.
This is not a demonstration against the performance of sports and the spirit of peace that should be felt within the city during these days. The demonstrations are for other reasons. First, the environmental and social impact that these games have had in the mountains and in the city. And the second point is because all the money used by the city government, also money that the people need for city services to make Torino nice for the world, was thrown away and cut from Torino's economy.
In fact, Torino was known as the Fiat City. Actually, there are more than 5,000 Fiat workers without work. According to the World Wildlife Fund, the gas used by the torch in 15 days was the same amount that a town with 3,500 people uses in 1 year. For Free Speech Radio News from Torino, I am Manuela Aldabe.
Former Senegalese Prime Minister Idrissa Seck was set free this week after 7 months in prison. After his release, the one-time top ally of Senegalese President Abdoulaye Wade said that nothing weighs on him more heavily than the difficulties his country faces, and nothing will stop him from his ambition to serve Senegal. His imprisonment led to some of his supporters abandoning the Senegalese Democratic Party, or PDS, and causing a split in the party. Yet his release does not appear to be a unifying factor. In Senegal, FSRN's Ndiaga Seck reports.
Last Tuesday, former Senegalese Prime Minister Idrissa Seck was released from prison after 7 months in detention on charges of embezzling funds destined to public works in the city of Thiès and threatening state security. The Senegalese High Court decided partial dismissal of charges with immediate release after examining charges against Idrissa Seck, who served as Prime Minister for 18 months from November 2002 before being sacked by President Wade. But many Senegalese believe the jailing wasn't fair and was only a political manipulation. Moussa Tine is a member of Senegalese Parliament.
I can't say that he wasn't guilty because I don't know. All I know is that the court file has been politically set up, as they wanted to solve some political contentions using the judiciary means. And today it's clear that the bone of contention opposing the president to the former prime minister isn't the public works projects of Thiès, but the political funds. The taxpayers' money is managed in a very unclear way, and it's high time we brought reforms to the management of political funds.
Idrissa Seck played a major role in securing Wade's political win in the 2000 presidential elections and helped President Wade's Senegalese Democratic Party, PDS, gain a majority in parliament in 2001. Today, many say Seck should replace 80-year-old Wade as leader of PDS to win the 2007 elections. Some youth even asked MPs who passed the bill of accusation of the former prime minister to resign. The former prime minister has yet to make clear his political intentions, but many want him to found his own party and run for president next year. For FSIN in Senegal, I'm Ndiaga Seck.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. I'm Aura Bogado.